This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I am retired jockey Christina McManigal. I'm here in our Lexington, Kentucky studio, and I would like to welcome everyone listening tonight throughout North America on Sirius 220, XM 206, and to those of you listening to our website at horseracingradio.net. Now, a portion of the proceeds from this show go to benefit the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides support for so many riders who have suffered on-track, life-altering injuries. Please show your support. Visit pdjf.org for more information. A very special surprise this evening. We have two guests tonight. First time in Jock Talk history we've ever done something like this, but our guests tonight are in the habit of making history together. After all, in 1976, they were the first husband and wife team to compete in a parimutuel race together. I can't wait to hear this story, so let's get this party started. John and Susie Oldham, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hello, Christina. Thanks for having us on.
So great to have you folks here. Like I said, this is just such a pleasure. You're here in studio, and we've never done this, and so I'm so excited to hear. I've never encountered a husband and wife team who rode against each other. That has to be different.
It was a very exciting time as we led up to it. And of course, I know that there are a lot of couples out there that rode against each other, and I'd love someday to get to talk to some of them. But to our understanding, and that seems to be the case all these years, no one's said any different, that we were the first to ride in a parimutuel race against each other. So there was a lot of fun leading up to it. I'm going to let Johnny kind of tell you the story or how it got reported that night, because he's so good at it.
Well, we'd both ridden against each other, and naturally one of us beat the other. And as I recall, I beat her. And so as we were driving home that evening, listened to the radio in the car, they announced on the radio, jockey John Oldham beats his wife in front of 7,000 people. So it was just kind of fun to hear that on the radio, and I've been paying the price ever since.
Oh, no. How was it that evening at home?
We were young and kind of newlywed, so that was a good year.
It was all good.
As time went by and the marriage got longer, you know, when you're riding against each other, when jocks get in trouble, they get days. But in our case, you got nights.
On the couch.
Yeah, it was a fabulous time. And being married and in the spotlight, it was also fun the week before our wedding at Churchill Downs. We didn't get married at Churchill Downs, but the week leading up to it, there was a lot of publicity on who was riding what and who was beating who. And I happened to ride a few races on my wedding day and won one, so it was a real special time.
On your wedding day, Susie, that has to be different. I know several friends who've gotten married, they're all busy planning the wedding. Don't know anyone who's ridden races on their wedding day.
Yep. That was probably one of my favorite pictures from my wedding album, that wind picture.
That is too funny. Well, I told you folks before we went on air here how we usually do these shows. We kind of go back. We take it back to how you all got here, how you all became involved in the sport. And Susie, let's start with you. How you, of course, Susie Paikou, your father, of course, we all know your father. Tell us your beginnings.
Well, my father, of course, Clarence Paikou, was a longtime jockey himself. He was sort of a Steve Cawthon of his day back in the late 40s. After the Army and going back to riding, and he retired, he started back into training quarter horses and then thoroughbreds. So I grew up with that, having horses out in the back pasture with a starting gate, a two-horse starting gate. So at the age of 4 or 5, I'm following him to the barn, brushing horses, trying to climb up on them. And I saw my first woman jockey at match races down in Louisiana in southeast Texas. Really? When I was probably 7 or 8 years old. And I knew from then that that's what I wanted to do eventually. So, of course, following Dad around to the tracks, working with the horses at a young age, I was galloping some on the little training track at the fairgrounds when I was 12.
Wow.
So it was just natural for me. I only went to school because Dad said I had to I couldn't ride unless I graduated. So, yeah, it was very natural for me to fall into that. I rode my first race at Churchill Downs and won it.
Oh, wow.
And my career was a bit on the modest side, but I do feel proud that I consider myself one of the pioneers from the day. Everybody knows Kentucky can be a tough spot to get started.
Well, of course, and no matter where you are, I would think back in those days, it was hard for a woman anywhere to get started. I can't even imagine.
Yeah, it could be tough. I was very fortunate and wouldn't trade anything for starting off in Kentucky. I mean, my father, of course, had owners, and it was tough for him to convince them to let me ride. But at that time, though, women were riding well and getting a lot of rides up east, like from Penn National and spots like that. But I liked where I was.
Yeah. Yeah, well, like you said, it was tough, I'm sure, in Kentucky. Now, how about your first mount? You won your first mount. Was that a horse your father trained?
Yes, there's a little more story to that particular one. It was a filly that my father had. I rode her, galloped her in the mornings. In fact, was on her for some of her first workouts as a two-year-old. But I wasn't ready to ride yet. So in her first year, my husband actually, or future husband at the time, was riding her and won 3 races on her. Her name was Sly Liz. Of course, we all remember our first mounts. But, being the daughter of the trainer, I got to steal that mount from him. And she gave me a good ride.
Wow, that is very interesting. And,
yeah.
And, John, you still wanted to date her after that.
Yeah, I went 3 in a row on that filly, and then all of a sudden she got my mount. But, you know, it's been tough because, like she said, one of her favorite pictures in her photo wedding album is her win picture. It kind of lets you know where I'm at.
Where are you ranked, John?
Yeah.
Sorry,
dear.
Wow, that is too funny. Do you remember the actual race at Churchill? Do you remember how the race set up?
Oh, yes. In fact, my father, who was very nervous about this whole thing, of course, you can imagine, we had gone to lunch earlier that day, and because we all know that races don't or seldom shape up the way you think they will. But that day, Dad said, this is where I think you're going to be, and this is when I want you to move with her, and this is how it's probably going to happen. And lo and behold, the race unfolded just as he said.
Really?
But I remember, and I can remember to this day, that last 16th of a mile, all of a sudden, you know, you see that open track in front of you. You're in front. You kind of see a shadow of the grandstand to the side. But all of a sudden, you feel like you're in a dream. It's so surreal. And as soon as I hit the finish line, I popped up and said, unreal. And, you know, I hope that I do remember that to my last day.
Oh, absolutely. So, Gives me chills just hearing you describe. We all remember our first win, and that's just such an incredible feeling.
Even Russell Bayes would remember his first win.
Russell Bayes, who just announced he's retiring with how many 12,000 something
over 12,000 wins. That's what a
incredible
career!
Incredible,
untouchable milestone.
Oh, absolutely, I completely agree with you. I don't think anyone will ever.
No, with the shorter fields we're having currently, unfortunately, and racetracks choking themselves down to 4 days a week. Mm-hmm. I don't see where anybody in the title chasing will achieve that.
I completely agree with you. Now, how many victories did you both encompass during your career?
We didn't have all that many victories, but we had a good percentage in batting average. So, and myself, I got to ride some good horses, as you know, the favorite in the Kentucky Derby. So, having done that, got quite a bit of attention put to me in recognition from the career that I had.
Of course. And John, let's go to you now. How did you get started in the sport?
Well, I was just out walking around. No, I was working in a restaurant with Eddie Arcaro's sister, and she had mentioned something to me about coming into the business as a jockey, and I knew that if there was ever an opportunity got in front of me, that was it. And so I asked her to, you know, help me out, and she called her brother Eddie, and through several connections, I wound up with a trainer locally here from Versailles, Kentucky, named Herb Stevens. So he started me out walking horses so I could learn the mannerisms of the racehorses and the industry itself. And so I lived in a tack room there in the barn at Keeneland for almost 3 years, stepping in it to learn the industry and how it functioned. And, you know, a lot of riders don't come up that way anymore because the backside is drastically different than it was in my era. So I look back at it, I'm so glad that I did come up that way.
Oh, to learn from the ground up, you had to learn just everything involved. You had to see exactly what went into the care of a racehorse to actually get him to the races. Then when all that pressure is on you for that 2 minutes you're on board the horse, you understand how much work actually is involved.
Yes, you do analyze it and appreciate it more. I mean, I look back and kind of wished I did put a little bit more appreciation into the blood, sweat, and tears of getting a horse to the post. The horse, when you're pointing a horse toward the race, you have to have it at its pinnacle of its best on that day. To race, and then you have to have the good racing luck to go along with it. One doesn't work without the other. But
Right. Yeah,
there's a lot of little technical things that you do to a horse to have it at its best or relatively close to it on race day, and that's the professionalism of a trainer.
Absolutely. And John, I'm curious. So you're working at a restaurant with Eddie Arcaro's sister. How did you grow up prior to that? Did you ever think... I mean, you said, you know, if the opportunity presented itself, you would have jumped on it. But what did you plan to do with your life prior to having that opportunity?
Well, other than that, I'd always been told that I should be a jockey. And I really didn't know where the window to the industry was. But when that came along, I knew that was the path that I needed to pursue and follow. So I utilized her in the form of the fact that she... I knew she had a good end. Yeah. Other than that, I'd been to a racetrack or two and seen them go around there. I remember one time I went to River Downs and went to the paddock and looked up and watched the riders go out. And I said to myself, if they can do this, I can do this. And that was a defining moment in my life that I knew that was something I could do.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Did you ever sit on a horse prior to being involved with Herb Stevens?
Not a thoroughbred.
But you did ride maybe like a quarter horse or?
Yeah, I've ridden some pleasure horses. And probably the best lesson I learned in galloping horse was a little pony I had that ran off with me, and after I couldn't get him stopped, then I just kicked him in his gizzard and made him keep going.
There you go. That's it. Wear him out.
Yeah. I said, you'll quit sometime or another.
Exactly. Exactly.
You learned you could hold on.
Yeah. Yeah. They got it. Yeah.
There's a future.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, they teach you that when you come on track, keep a leg on each side and your mind in the middle.
That's right. That's right. I love it. I love it, John. So Herb Stevens, when you first were introduced to him, what was did he hire you right there on the spot, or?
He hired me right there. I can remember what he told me when he hired me. He said, yeah, I'll give you a chance. He said, I'll start you out paying you $50 a week. You can live in that tack room down here. I'll start you out walking horses, and you can learn the business. Don't ask me for a raise. I'll give you one when I think you need one or deserve one.
Wow.
Hard boot.
I didn't say so. And how long did it take before you were actually galloping horses for him?
Well, I walked all summer long and started breaking yearlings, which was at the time not a good way to start. I remember getting off the first bucking yearling I got on. And when I finally got off of him and got out of the stall, I said, I'm done here. I said, I come here to learn to be a jockey, not a rodeo rider. And they said, no, this is the best way to learn. You got most of the jump down of him. He won't jump like that with you tomorrow. You got to come back. Well, dumb as I am, sure enough, I came back next day. But he didn't jump as much, so I stuck it out.
That was good. Then you got the next one that did jump just as much, right?
Yeah, well, I got a little better at holding on to him. So,
there you go. You learned real quick, I'm sure.
Yeah, the hard way.
The hard way.
Breaking horses.
Exactly. And then so then after you break yearlings, then you're galloping for Herb Stevens. And was he really hands-on with teaching you how to ride?
No, he just provided me with an opportunity. As far as the techniques of riding, he had never done it and really never did explain to me any techniques that a race rider did. I learned most of that from other people that had ridden horses. And what amazed me was I would speak to somebody about a situation, or they'd just tell me a story about something, and then I would go out there on a horse, and that thing would transform in a matter of split seconds, and I would respond appropriately according to what somebody told me, to where it was in my subconscious, and so that was pretty neat having that happen.
Of course, and we've had guests on the show before who always emphasize so much the importance of the older riders helping out the younger riders who are learning, because it benefits everyone on the track, because you all want to go home safely afterwards. So, of course, as you're learning to gallop, I'm sure there were older veterans out there trying to give you the best piece of advice, just looking out for you, but for them also, because...
Sure. If I'm riding better, they're in a safer place as well.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And I had the advantage of having a father who was a very good rider on a pony next to me, showing me things as we went along. And Johnny was, he had some of the old traditional old boys galloping with him back in the day. But like he said, it was more of the professionals seeing him from the ground and saying, well, you need to try this and that.
Sure. Did anyone, Susie, besides your father try to give you advice, or was it pretty much just solely your father helping you out?
No, I mean, it was the riding colony that I was around then. Of course, they knew me as a kid and knew my father and respected him. So I was so fortunate that several of those people, Eddie Delahousie comes to mind. He was one of those that always felt fortunate to have gotten a ride with back then.
Right.
But they would step up and say, you know, give me advice and say what I needed to do or do differently or try to do.
Now, I'm still telling her to check her girth.
And, you know, even before we were married, any time that we worked horses side by side, there was always a my way and the wrong way with him. So I got all kinds of advice, especially from Johnny.
I love it. I love it. And you guys ended up getting married. What do you know? Yep. Now, Susie, that was there one defining moment where maybe your father pulled you aside in the tack room or wherever and said, "You're ready to ride."
You know, it was a subtle, reluctant time. I mean, he wanted to start me off, and he was excited for me. But I know, being a father, he was scared to death.
Of course.
In fact, for that first race, I believe Dad went out on the pony on that day, and it was a cold day in November.
Oh goodness.
Yeah, eggs and water in 30 degrees.
Oh yeah, they got you good, huh?
No, but I didn't care.
Was John part of that crowd to initiate you after the race?
I think he was missing from that scene.
Yeah, I got left out on that deal thanks to my valet.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't talk about that too much.
Yeah, it really bothered me. I was running up and down the road a lot. I'd get up in the morning, get on horses at Keeneland, and then I would go to Churchill Downs and ride the races, and then take Miss Susie out for dinner that evening. So by the time I got back to Keeneland and did it all again, I had some tired moments. So I was taking a nap and had asked my valet to make sure he woke me up for a certain race, and it didn't happen.
Oh,
and
so no.
Literally slept through it. Yeah. Yeah.
He watched the replay.
That doesn't count, though. The replay doesn't count.
Fired the valet.
No, you fired the valet after that.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's done.
Yeah.
Well, Susie, I remember reading an article where you were describing the way the girls' room, if you can even call it that, at Churchill Downs, how that was set up at the time. And I actually, it's funny because I rode my first race at Churchill. It was very nice. It was just fine. You know, there was another girl rider in there. I can't even remember at this time who it was, but I was so nervous. I don't even remember. But it was very nice. And I'm sure you had a very different experience.
Yeah, it wasn't until I was pretty much done when they opened up the jocks rooms in both Keeneland and at Churchill, women's quarters. So at Churchill, there was a little white shed. It looked like a shed, just a little tiny white building that was actually at the bottom of the escalator as we know it now. That was the first aid room, and that was where the girls changed and weighed in and showered. They had a stand-up portable shower.
Oh my gosh.
Put in there. It was really kind of funny. But yeah, it was at the time, and one of the girls I remember riding there with me, and I was in awe of her then, was Diane Crump.
Oh, wow.
So there was some pretty important gals down there.
In that first aid
room.
In
the shack, a little white shack.
Wow. It had to be, and I'm sure there weren't too many girls riding at the time, but I'm sure it was crowded in there no matter what.
Yeah, I don't think there was ever more than two or three of us, but yeah, and... who wants to take a shower and step out in the middle of an open room, you know? It's like,
that is, yeah.
At Keeneland, it was the first aid room, which was much larger than that little Churchill first aid room. But everybody treated us pretty nice.
We've come a far way.
There was sometimes that it was difficult, some tracks where, I remember at Oaklawn, we were pretty far removed from the jocks room, and you had to take some back corridors to even go up stairs to weigh in.
Oh, no.
Or weigh out. And it could be difficult, you know, and it was uncomfortable sometimes.
Sure it was. Yeah. Sure it was. We've come a long way.
Well, that was the growing pains the industry had, got fronted with, and there's still, you know, some things that need to be done in respect of jockeys and a lot of jocks' quarters.
Of course, but we're much better than the shack with the portable shower.
Yeah.
I will say that. Now, you mentioned Diane Crump. Were there any other women you can remember their names off the top of your head who you were riding against?
Let's see. There was a Pam Donovan was one that was here local that I rode with. Boy, I'm having trouble pulling up names.
Alice,
there weren't that many of us. Alice Knowles.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Yes. a lot of the girls that came along and did so well and won a lot of races came in just after I had kind of, I was done.
Started having
a few babies.
And a lot more of the girls were riding up on the East Coast than in the Midwest.
Right. And it did seem like you mentioned, it did seem to be easier to break in as a woman on the East Coast versus in the Midwest. And I don't know why that was.
But it didn't take, it wasn't that long. Women like Patty Cooksey, came in and certainly made her mark as a good rider, a very talented rider. And Julie Crone, who actually, her mother brought her to the track and she started working for my father.
Really?
In those early days. I had already stopped riding and... when I look back, I thought it was pretty cool that we actually galloped a few horses together when I would come back after babies and gallop horses. And
no kidding.
So I got to watch her develop and what a talent she was. But I'm so proud of so many women who have won a lot of races. There's so many that I'm just over the years got to know or learned about. So if you've got the talent, you can get there.
Go for it. Mm-hmm. Go for it, right?
Yeah.
John and Susie Oldham joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Now, John, do you remember that moment maybe where you thought, I'm ready to start riding races? Or was Herb Stevens, did he pull you aside?
No. I had to show him that I was ready. We didn't talk much. There wasn't much friendly conversation between him and anybody that worked for him anyway. And so I would just do things on the horse that were pretty impressive. I got pretty good. And one incident I can remember, he always stood up on the top of the hill there. He was stabled on the hill up from the training track. And I recall working a horse one time, and I was about 2 inches off of that inside rail. And I mean, I literally hugged the rail about 2 inches off of it and worked this horse down the stretch where I knew he could see that I didn't deviate one iota from them 2 inches and just skim that rail all the way down through there on this horse. And then there was other incidences that I felt that I performed very well that was pretty impressive. And just by my advancement in learning how to control a horse and get a horse to perform properly and work good and do this, that, and the other. And I got better at coming out of the gate and things like that. I think he seen that I was ready.
Well, John, I want to talk about your first ride when we come back. We'll be back with Susie and John Oldham after this short commercial break. Stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, but the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
This is CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. Presque Isle leading rider Antonio Gallardo had a great week as he won stakes races at Presque Isle Downs and Monmouth Park. Gallardo led North America in wins with 11 and added 3 seconds and 8 third place finishes. Brian Hernandez had a solid week at Churchill, highlighted by a win in the Grade 3 Regret Stakes aboard Anti Joy. Hernandez finished the week with 5 wins, 2 seconds, and 3 third place finishes. Mike Smith continued his impressive big race riding as he won a pair of Grade 2 stakes races at Santa Anita. On Saturday, Smith won the Summertime Oaks aboard the Super Filly Songbird and followed up on Sunday with a win in the Honeymoon Stakes aboard Chickaboo. For the week, Smith won 3 out of his 5 mounts. Finally, the Jockeys Guild Jockey of the Week, Joe Bravo, won 3 stakes at 3 different tracks, highlighted by an upset victory in the Grade 1 Stephen Foster aboard Braidster. Bravo led North America in earnings and finished the week with 4 wins and 1 third place finish. Ride to Win, an inside look at the jockey's craft, explores everything that goes into winning a race from the rider's perspective. How do jockeys land mounts? How do they plan strategy? What are jockeys thinking and trying to do as a race unfolds? The book answers those questions and many more. A significant portion of the proceeds go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. For excerpts, testimonials, and to order, visit JockeyTalk360.com. This has been CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. For all the latest news in the jockey world, visit JockeyTalk360.com and follow us on Twitter at Jockey Talk.
This is Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I am Christina McManigle, joined tonight by John and Susie Oldham. And right before we went to break, John, we were just talking about how you were gearing up to ride your first race. And let's go back to that moment. Do you remember the race?
Oh, I remember it well. It was on a filly named Friendly Chat. And when I'd never been in a jockey saddle or jockey boots or jock pants or anything. So when I walked out in them little thin jock pants and flat-footed jock boots, I almost felt like I was naked.
Not much covering you up, no sir.
So they give me a leg up on the horse, and I never felt that close to horse because I was so bare, I guess, and I just tucked into the horse, and when the gate opened, I felt so part of the horse. You may have heard the expression, you have to become part of the horse. And that was my first lesson on that. When I rode in that little bitty jock saddle and in them little thin pants and just loved it. I run up the track so far, they're still looking for her. But as far as the being comfortable at it, I knew from that first race I'd done found what I love to do.
Wow.
And so that was it. Keeneland, and then the following year, I broke my maiden on her full brother, Last Chat.
Really?
Yeah, so coincidentally, it was full brother to
all
my first mount. Yeah, and I win my first mount on her full brother, Last Chat.
Well, now, do you remember that ride?
Oh, yeah. That, like you say, it's one you don't forget, right. You know, because you just feel like I made it. I achieved it. You know, I'm a professional.
Yeah.
They're going to pay me for this.
Did they initiate you after that race?
I believe they did, but it probably wasn't as severe as Susie's egging.
Which you were not a part of, I might add.
Right, yeah. Well, then my Seth paraded us, and we might not be here to tell
the
story.
This is true. This is true.
She holds a grudge pretty good.
Well, she didn't know.
I'm not going to go there.
Smart woman. Now,
something about a saddle. Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, wait.
Oh,
wait,
don't
now
go
we
there.
Now we got to hear this.
Oh, now you got to stir it up.
Well, what happened to my saddle?
A couple of $100. For
yeah.
It.
Mm.
Yeah.
Really?
A great Lee Winchell saddle that tacked about 120 pounds. But after the first baby came along, I guess he thought I wasn't going to need it anymore.
Oh.
It worked.
Wow, that's not good.
Well, her value increased so much after she brought such a beautiful child into the world.
So you're like, nope.
No, you've got some serious cargo to pack around here.
Oh, wow.
But anyway, yeah, forgiven, but maybe not forgotten.
Well, that's, she forgave me. That's all that matters. That's all that matters. You know, it's all good.
Yeah.
Tell me, when did you guys meet?
We're not so sure. We had several encounters that were dramatic of twinkling eyes, I guess you'd say. But the one that I recall the most was at Churchill Downs. The race secretary's office was over in the grandstands at the time, and I was walking over to the grandstands from the backside, and Susie was walking back from the grandstands, and we kind of looked at each other and smiled, and then the old saying, look back to catch each other's eye, and I went on over there and dropped a claim in for her. And
yeah. Dropped the slip.
Yeah, we're coming up on a big 4-0, actually, very soon.
Yeah, so 40th anniversary. Yeah, thank
That's
you.
Huge. Yeah. That's huge.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I still, we both remember that moment. And then we, I think we're officially introduced to each other one day at Keeneland. So it's all been
at
backside.
The racetrack. At the racetrack.
Yeah.
Where did he take you on your first date?
How did you know to ask that question? Our first date was just kind of funny. I'm from Louisiana.
Tell her about asking you out.
Oh, he came along and
track
saw me at the track kitchen and a little small talk and said, well, do you want to go out? And I said, well, yeah, I guess so. And you want me to tell this how it really is?
Well, if you can keep the violence out. Yeah, and what I'd like for you to tell the story of you in the car. And
I used to drive my stepmother's car around, a flashy little silver Firebird.
Oh, wow.
Well, and I think that's what caught his eye.
Oh.
So he happened to see me and asked me out, and he said, well, we can take your car, right? I was like, hey, I don't have a car. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
I didn't either at the time.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
So, but through the help of a friend, our first date was actually a LSU-Kentucky football game.
Oh, really?
And then, which neither one of us are into football whatsoever, but we happened to get tickets, so we went, had a good time, and went to one of the old landmarks here in Lexington, Joe Bologna's, for dinner after, which is the spot we took our daughter her first night out from the hospital as a newborn.
Oh,
we went to the same spot. But the old Joe Bologna's pizza.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was real fancy. It was a real fancy evening.
Hey, but it sounds like a lovely evening.
Wasn't making much money at the time.
Yeah, we're both, you know, kind of getting
started.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Sure, were you both, you were riding races at the time?
No, yes. No.
No, Johnny, you had started.
I think I'd have ridden the friendly chat two times at Keeneland.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that. So we...
Well,
we
then were, she took your mount, so...
Well, yeah. The winning mount, after yeah. I'd won 3 in a row on Sly Liz and lost the mount.
So, and so when we... Our first date, I had not ridden my first race yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I see. Yeah. Did he offer you any advice when you were
all the time? All
yeah.
the time.
It's an ongoing process.
Yeah. Yeah. You know that that phrase, selective hearing?
Oh, yes. Yes. Put that to good.
That's
to
one
good
of the use. Secrets to a life, a long
40
marriage.
40 years of marriage?
Yeah, yes.
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 Yes. I understand completely. Now, how about, okay, so you go to the football game, you go to dinner. How long did you guys see each other before you actually, you got down on one knee?
Oh, it was several years. And,
several years.
And I didn't. She asked me.
Oh.
Shh. It was leap year. It was leap year. I had to.
Well, tell me this story now.
Well, we were just, we got pretty close and knew that, you know, we felt pretty strongly about each other and wanted to be together and take this this whole horse racing life. We figured, you know, two people that know it so well and understand it, it should work.
Right.
So, although my father at the time said, you know, next time I start out a girl rider, I'm going to make her sign a no marriage clause.
Oh, no way.
But that, and then, of course, that led to the next thing where, though, there was a challenge because of where we were riding, Kentucky and Ohio, we didn't anticipate the fact that the Ohio stewards were afraid to let us ride against each other. So where I would have, we would both have gone to River Downs, which where Johnny, of course, was doing so well at the time, I broke off and went to Ellis Park. But I didn't mind that so much. We didn't like being apart, but I kind of grew up on that backside, but my father trained there, and I won quite a few races there.
So you were familiar with
yeah.
Ellis.
Yeah, so yeah, she was at home,
right.
per se,
sure.
to where I was at home as well. So we sort of got sent back home.
Right, but apart.
By the profession.
Right, yeah. And they just, so you had to speak with the stewards, and they said, nope, sorry.
Right.
When we yeah. when we approached the stewards in Kentucky, which at the time Keene Dangerfield was one of the
head stewards
there, sure. and of course a very very classy man, but he said, you know, in this day and age, I don't see how we can keep you from it.
Right.
So, and then a number of years later, I'm not sure just when they kind of lifted that rule in Ohio.
Well, thank goodness.
Yeah.
And you probably paved the way for that, right?
But yeah. Well, that was after, you know, after us, but hopefully for sure. Others who came along.
Of course.
It made things easier.
And Susie, you mentioned how well John was doing in Ohio. And John, you were, what, second in the standings?
I was second in the standings at the time Steve Cawthon was setting the world on fire up
wow.
there. Steve Cawthon was phenomenal with the way horses would run for him. He done less on a horse than anybody had ever seen. It looked like he was just sitting there, but the horses were all out and right running for him. And it goes back to that old saying, less you do is more sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that seemed to be the way they would respond. Pat Day always said, You need to be a good passenger, and that's what he was.
Right.
He was new. He was green to the industry. He didn't have that much to offer as far as being a race rider, so he didn't come doing a lot on the horse, but the horses must have loved what he didn't do or something
right.
because they would respond for him like nothing I ever seen. It may have been his innocence that he projected. He was very young, just as kind of fella and young man as it had ever come along. And wow. Whatever he had to offer electrified the horses.
Wow. Well, and you were obviously doing very well yourself, John, to be second, like I mentioned, in the standings. And now I want to bring up a horse we're all familiar with, Rock Hill Native.
Okay. All right.
Take us back to Rock Hill Native.
All right. Well, he had 17 starts, 10 wins, 3 seconds, and 3 thirds. And one off of the board, Agony of Defeat, and that was in the Derby. And that was due to the fact that everything did not line up prior to that race. In when it comes to a race, and especially a big race, you have to have everything come to be, as I mentioned before, to be at its apex of all systems on go for that event, and then you have to have the luck. Well, unfortunately, we had several mishaps prior to the Derby that did not align the horse up to be in a position to win on that day. Mm. And I don't have any regrets about it because I know me, and had I won that race, my lifestyle would have been so different than it were as of right now, and I'm very content.
Right.
You know, Susie and I seem to be a lot closer now than seemed like all the years of scuffling, trying to build a family and all. And
sure.
And I'm very happy with my life as of right now.
As you should be, John, as you should be. And I want to talk about, first, you won the Bluegrass Stakes aboard Rock Hill Native.
Yes, and that entitled him to be the favorite for the Kentucky Derby. He was Eclipse Award-winning champion at 2.
Right.
And then so, unfortunately, another thing, the Bluegrass Stakes was only 9 days in front of the Derby. Now it's to the extreme
wow.
the other way, and it's way in front
nine
of the Derby.
Days.
9 days.
Wow, that's
I mean,
no
yeah,
time.
Yeah, you cool him out and saddle him up.
you
know?
Go, yeah.
And so like I said, things that was a bit of an interference.
Of
the road to the Derby was a rough road, and so it didn't help this horse individually prepare for that race. So that was one of the things that did not allow for the victory to transpire.
Sure. Now, I want to ask you, John, and I, of course, every jockey hates to talk about disqualifications and things like this, but was he disqualified in the Hopeful Stakes, Saratoga?
Yes, he was. Had a horse come over on him a little bit, not bump him or anything, but intimidated him and probably me as well. And so we went in as well, and when we did, I put the squeeze on Angel Cordero down inside of me and that was at Saratoga, and that was his backyard.
Yeah.
And they actually held it up. It was quite a controversial inquiry, and they held it up so long that they didn't decide who the winner would be or if I would come down until the horses were coming on the track for the next race.
Wow.
It was an incident out of the starting gate.
Oh, right out of the gate.
Yeah, shortly after the gate.
Sure.
The outside horse come in, and so the impediment was not far out of the gate. Yeah.
Well, he still went on to do wonderful things, of course. And now the Derby. I can't imagine, of course, every jockey has in their mind, I want to ride the Derby one day. How was that moment for you to be on the track? And that just had to be incredible.
Well, it was overwhelming when they played my old Kentucky home.
Absolutely.
And if you have a conscience, that'll get to you.
Of course.
But when the man said go and the gate flew open, it was like I said about my first race, of how I'd become part of the horse. When the gate opened, I went, all right, now I know where I'm at. You know, reality set back in, and we're in a race. And so that part of it, it was neat how it came back to reality.
Brought it all back together.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Jockey John and Susie Oldham joining me tonight on Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Susie, I want to talk to you. I know your daughter, Jessica. We went to jockey school together. Well, she went the year before I did. But let's go back to when you're riding races and then you guys decide to have a family and I'm unaware. Do you have more than one child, Jessica?
Yes. Our son, John, came 2 years almost after Jessica. In fact, in our business, I think everyone can relate to the fact that it seems like all your wonderful things, all the good positive things come simultaneously. And I was expecting my second child, our son, John, when Johnny rode the Bluegrass and was going into the Derby, his favorite. In fact, he won the Bluegrass. I was standing out in the winner's circle holding little Jessica, and I'm about 7 or 8 days overdue.
Oh, my gosh.
And,
oh, no.
Lo and behold, our son was born the very next day.
Wow.
So it was such an exciting time in our lives for both professionally and personally. Anyway, both of our children tried to work on the track. My son tried to. Unfortunately, every time he was in a barn, I had to take him to the doctor because he was so allergic.
Oh.
Very, very proud of him. Not very many people know him because he spent 14 years active military, both Navy and Army, and he's still in the National Guard.
Oh, that's fantastic.
But he shows up from time to time. But anyway... and then Jessica loved galloping horses. She galloped some, went in the Navy herself for a stint, came back to the track. Chris's school emerged, and she said, what a great opportunity to learn under someone like Chris McCarron and get my degree or finish my degree, because she had already been to college down south a bit before she went in the Navy. So that was a wonderful experience, as I'm sure that you would agree, especially that first class. And, of course, we've had people like Jackie Davis come from that group, Ben Creed.
Ben Creed, yeah.
Chris did an amazing job, and his leadership with those first several classes was awesome. But Jessica did ride a few races. Her very first race was the exhibition race, of course, which traditionally there for a while, the graduates had a race at the High Hope Steeplechase.
Right.
And just, you know, and it just goes to show you that the love for the sport and the horse, it didn't matter that we weren't at a recognized racetrack that day. That win just was over the top, you know, and she'll, I'm sure, remember that.
Always.
Today
you
she
can't
does.
Beat that feeling. You but, can't. Now, I have to ask, were you scared watching her ride? Or
I was a nervous wreck watching her work horses on the track, going to the pole. I probably said, now I know what my father felt like. Oh, bless his soul. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
We saw her first race from Hawaii. No, we listened to it from
it.
Hawaii.
Yeah,
we,
oh, were, Hawaii.
We were actually on an anniversary trip visiting our son who was stationed in Hawaii. And so we drove all over the island trying to find a place, a sports bar, something that we could watch this race, and was unsuccessful. And a good friend of ours from, it was at River Downs, very special, longtime friend of ours, was there and called us, and we listened to it, I think, on the phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, that's hilarious.
But Jessica galloped for many years. In fact, she and probably loves that as much, or maybe even more so than the riding races. And she got was fortunate enough to ride Dream Empress in the mornings for Kenny McPeak, who turned into a very nice stakes filly, and she won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies.
Right.
So she's had some very memorable times on the track.
Absolutely, it's nice to ride a horse every day like that who goes on to do so much.
Right.
It's such
great.
A satisfying feeling to know that you were part of that, and of course, you folks know that as well. But so Jessica rode races, and then John went to the military. Now we don't have much time left. I can't believe how quickly this hour is flying by. I could sit here with you guys for hours.
That's
Fortunately,
fine.
We don't have hours. But let's talk about what you guys are doing now. Susie, I know you've done a lot since your riding career.
Yes. I got into photography, just kind of fell into it out of a pleasure. And that kind of took me on this journey with Thoroughbred Publications. So I took photos and worked in advertising departments for the old Thoroughbred Record, Thoroughbred Times. I shot pictures for DRF, for Daily Racing Form for a time. Then I'll try to rush this up.
No, take
then I
now we're good.
I got involved with stallion farms, and my first job on a farm was at the previously owned Dixiana Farm, where I represented stallions like Mr. Greeley and Prized. I mean, I was there when Mr. Greeley first came off the track, and sold seasons and handled their marketing. And then I spent some time at Stonewall Farm, where I got to be part of Medaglia d'Oro's career, which was just wonderful, enjoyable. I'm very proud of that. To be part of those horses when they come off the track and see their careers change. And now I'm currently with ownerview.com at the Jockey Club, and help promote and put on the National Thoroughbred Owner Conference, which Mike has been a big part of for us. We're very proud.
Yes.
Mike was one of our moderators with our first two conferences, and HRRN has been a very good supporter of the Owner Conference, and we appreciate that.
That's fantastic, Susie. Fantastic. Well, we only have about 5 minutes left. John, tell us what you're doing now.
Well, when I stopped riding, I dabbled with training a little bit, and It just looked like I was going to get back on the merry-go-round, and the first thing you know, you're down the road. And that's what kind of bothered me about being a jockey later on. I was never at home. I was always getting drugged, you know, 1,000 miles away from home, and I just felt like the separation of home life and racing life wasn't working, and then I had to choose one of them.
Right.
So anyway, I dabbled with training. I had got involved with a few horses, and then, you know, was hearing horrible stories about owners not paying their bills and skipping out on trainers and leaving them with a $30,000 deficit or something. And I knew I wasn't in a position to handle that. So anyway, I got into the mutual end of the racing industry and worked with the mutual department at Keeneland, and then went to work for United Tote, and they provide the betting machines and tote boards for a number of racetracks around the country, and I have been with them now for over 20 years and primarily work on the betting machine and have a good understanding of the system and how it communicates with other systems and transfers the bets from somebody going up and placing a bet to the money getting into the pool.
Sure. And talking with you folks here now, there's so much that goes into this wonderful industry we're a part of, the mutuals and stallions and photography, and you both rode. I mean, it's just incredible to sit here and talk with you and just to learn more about all the different levels of that's in this industry. It's incredible.
And, you know, we really enjoy sharing that. We've both been to schools. I've been to the Midway College. We've had groups that people have asked us to address, and we love sharing our industry and all the possibilities and opportunities in it. And there's a lot of good things happening, a lot of good moves toward racing and trying to bring in new owners. But we love this business.
Love it. Love it. Real quick, Susie, we have about a minute left. Have you owned horses yourself? You're part of OwnerView. Have you owned horses yourself?
I have, actually. I've had two that I've owned and been part of breeding, and another one that I bred. So I've actually had two winners as an owner, both with a longtime friend, Buff Bradley. I was part of a small partnership and then part of a syndicate. So we've kind of covered all the bases.
Yeah. I would say definitely. Well, thank you so much for joining us this evening and talking about all the different things you guys do. It's just incredible to hear your stories. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Christina. Thank you. We enjoyed it.
If you missed any portion of tonight's show, you can check out our website, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. On our website, you will also find a full schedule for every show on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We bring you something new almost every day of the week. Again, check it out, horseracingradio.net. Be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Christina McManigal. Thank you for listening.